when I was looking at the Parsha of Shoftim and noticing the different topics, they all had a very, very clear thread that ran through them all. I'll just read them to you and tell me what you think that thread is. Very clear. There's almost no exceptions in the entire Parsha, and there's a lot of topics. Establishment of just courts, blemish sacrifice, the death penalty for an idol worshiper, the rebellious elder who refuses to concede to the majority opinion in a court ruling. He's a sage too, and he has a different opinion, and he doesn't want to concede. A king, Jewish king, priestly gifts, prophecy, prophets, okay, cities of refuge, preserving boundaries, that means not moving, you know, boundaries are a real big thing when the Jews came into Israel. They were conquering and dividing, and every tribe had their boundary, and every family had his boundary. So there was a very strict commandment not to play around with the original boundary markers. Conspiring witnesses, that means false witnesses, mm-hmm. who are punished in kind to what they conspired to do. If they testified that so-and-so murdered when he didn't, well, they're trying to get him killed. Because that's the penalty for murder. And so if they are discovered to have been false, they get killed.
Let the punishment fit the crime.
Right. War. The whole procedure for the Jewish army in war. The Kohen following them into the battle and being kind of a spiritual leader. That was the first chaplaincy. And making sure that certain people whose minds are not on their mission go home.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Those unqualified to fight. And basically a person who is just starting a major life project, such as getting married, just got married, mm-hmm. he just built a house, he just planted a vineyard, and has not yet had time to use it,
he'd be excused.
He goes home. And while they're going home, he also says anybody who's afraid that they're not righteous and that they have sins, which may cause them to lose faith or may cause them to not have the greatest merit in the battlefield, he should go home too. And nobody will know, because all the other people are leaving.
So I bet there's only a handful left.
Well, that's all they needed.
Right.
A few righteous men.
Well, with Hashem on your side, that's about it.
That's right.
Right.
A few good men.
A few good men.
Overtures for peace, that the procedure of the army to try to offer peace to the nation that they're going to conquer. Preservation of fruit trees.
That doesn't seem to fit anywhere.
Well, it might be that they would cut down a tree to be like a battering ram, to use it in war, or maybe to make a fort. And so they're told, cut down a non-fruit-bearing tree, not a fruit-bearing tree.
Makes sense.
The case of the unsolved murder. Person was found slain in the middle of the road. We don't know where it happened, and we don't know which city may have been the cause, where the murderer could have come from, and therefore there's a case, and in order to atone for the situation, the unsolved case, there's a ceremony called the Axe Tefer. It's kind of like a sacrifice, but not really, not in the temple. But it's a ceremony by which everybody becomes very aware of the severity of such crimes taking place in their land. And it just heightens everyone's awareness to be vigilant about crime. Okay. There you have it. There's the menu. There's a common thread. And don't think too deeply about it. It's on the surface.
Man to man.
All right. You're thinking in the right direction. Man to man.
As opposed to man and God.
Mm-hmm. I think that would fit. I think that would fit. What were you thinking?
Conduct in the land.
Okay.
As opposed to traveling. We were really under God's care. Now, set up to set up a set of rules and live in the land of Israel by those rules.
All right, you're really saying it now. See, when we look back at the parsha of Re'eh, I saw I also saw laws that applied in the land. But somehow there was a difference. In Re'eh, there was a lot about sacrifices. There was the beginning, the blessing and the curse. It was an exhortation to the Jewish people to make the right choices and receive blessing for their good choices. A lot about the sanctity of the land, worship in the temple, offerings, sacrificial food, principles of observance, such as study, prayer, being merciful, and so forth. A lot of the mitzvahs in Re'eh applied to individual people, the way they conduct their lives. But in Shoftim, I think all of them are about establishments and institutions for the Jewish people, for the community. They are institutions by which we structure ourselves, the community, to observe Torah.
Like more or less what he said, man to man.
Man to man, but not me and you. But it's the way we all take responsibility, and we set up we are told that we have to do this together, and we have to enforce it.
So it's creating the institutions.
Creating the institutions. Ray, there are some communal things, there are many individual things. Pray, study. You know, these are things that every person does together or separate. But establishment of courts and enforcing the death penalty, for example, for an idol worshiper, and making sure that somebody does not contradict the court and accept their ruling. Establishing a king. Making sure that the priests are given their due and their support so that they can do their work without having to concern themselves with a livelihood. Prophecy. These are all institutional things, if you will. Cities of refuge. All institutional things. And how important that is in Torah. And I would say almost all of these, you know, we have a lot of the individual mitzvahs we can still do. But a lot of the institutions which are described in the Torah, we don't have. You know, we don't have the Jewish courts. They're not prevalent. In Israel, more so, they are. Amongst the religious. We don't really have a big, you know, presence of a, you know, judicial rabbinic court. If you want one, you can convene one. You can say, I've got a dispute with my Jewish friend here. Rather than going to the secular courts, we'd like to convene a Beis Din. We can do that. But it's not a major institution in town. There's no address. We don't have a king. We don't support the priests. Even in Israel, we don't support the priests. We support the rabbis. But actually, you know, that's true. And we've talked about that before. We've talked about what?
Are there any priests in Israel?
We've talked about who's playing the role of the priests. Because in addition to the temple service, we know that that was only a few weeks a year. The rest of the time, they were clergy. They were rabbis, teachers. Okay, so till now, this is the observation that was made a year ago, that Shoftim is the parsha of the institutions of the Jewish community. And by the way, last week I tried to, even though we were starting in the middle, we didn't do Devarim. We missed the first three parshas of Devarim, the book of Devarim, this year, unfortunately. But I was trying to see what the theme of the whole book would be. And we know that the whole book is basically Moshe talking to the people before he dies. Kind of like the last...
His farewell.
Farewell address, mm-hmm. which took 37 days.
Take the speech.
we break it into about 12 weeks. But, so what was his point? His point is, I'm going to leave you. I brought you this far. I taught you the Torah. But let me go over some things. And let me tell you, you, the new generation, who are standing at the threshold of the land, where these laws are really going to take effect, let me go over the important things that you need to know. And so every parsha, this is what I figure, every parsha is another chapter in that farewell address. The first chapter was devoted to rebuke. He basically went through the 40 years and all of the ups and the downs.
Yeah.
The Eschanan, on the other hand, he strengthened them. And he said, okay, we picked ourselves up. And God said, you're still going to go through the same mission. And I'm going to repeat the Ten Commandments now, 40 years later, as if to show you that God expects the same of you. He has not lost his expectations of you, nor his trust in you. And therefore, we're starting again. And I want you to know that you are no less in God's eyes than you were when we stood at Mount Sinai. I'm going to repeat the Ten Commandments again.
But the rules are still the same.
Rules are the same. But you don't think that you have become unworthy, you know.
Because of the
40 years and because of the pitfalls. So, Veschanan is kind of like building them up again after the rebuke. And it is, you know, Veschanan is traditionally called the Shabbos Nachamu, the Shabbos of comfort. It's after the morning day of Tisha B'Av. And it is a comfort. Tisha B'Av is like a day of rebuke, and Veschanan is the day of the, you know, the rebuilding. Akev is devoted almost solely to attitude things, not so many of the action commandments, but attitudes. Famous things like when you go into the land and you become wealthy and affluent, don't forget Hashem, and don't forget that He's who brought you here, who gave you this wealth. Things like, don't think that you're brought to the land because of your great righteousness, because you weren't so righteous. It's really because God loved your forefathers and made a covenant with them, and you are their children. So don't get too cocky, right? Those kind of things is what he told them. Not rebuke, you know, but attitude, important attitudes to walk into the land of Israel with. Re'e, our class last week, which was so well attended, was a mitzvah kit. We developed 10 points. Perry's got the CD. 10 points on about mitzvahs. We made it like a kit, toolkit. Important things about mitzvahs. Now, Shoftim is next chapter in the farewell address. This is how you set up the community. These are institutions that you need in the community. Okay. And we'll see next week what as it goes. But so what's how can we deepen this? How can we go into this a little more? I was looking at all these institutions and I'm saying, what does each institution represent? Judges, enforcement officers, as also mentioned here. Adjudicate and punish idolaters in your community. listen to the sages and the authority. Allow them to make, to enact decrees which go beyond the restrictions of the Torah in order to make offense, and follow those. Appoint a king. Support your Levite tribe. And on and on and on, as we've seen. I was looking at each of these points. What does each one represent? And basically, I think they could be broken down. They can be identified in one of four different ways. And these four different ways correspond, I found on the computer. We have a fantastic CD which has a whole library full of sources that we don't even have in this library. And all you got to do is you got to type in a word or a couple of words, and it gives you every source from Talmud down to the most recent responsa that contain those words in it. It's the most amazing thing. You can have all of Torah at your fingertips.
Amazing.
So I was looking at this thing. I said some of these things have to do with judgment, you know, justice. Some have to do with keeping people righteous. Some things have to do with keeping people honest and truthful. Anyways, I typed in the words tzedek and emes. Tzedek is righteousness, and emes is truth. I typed in those two words, tzedek and emes. It's the first time I've actually done a search for a class like this. And it came out with 34 different entries. And one of those was a quote from a portion of the Oral Law called Avos Rabbi Nosson. The quote was chapter 43, but I didn't find a chapter 43 in the original because I looked it up. I don't know exactly where it is.
Where they got it from.
Yeah, but it's a quote.
Somewhere.
And it says the following. Dalid de Regalim Raglayim Lekisei HaKavod. That the throne of glory, which is God's, which is a metaphor for God's place, has four legs. The throne of glory has four legs. Tzedek, righteousness, U'mishpat, justice, chesed, kindness, and emes, and truth. So it's got the word, I put in the two words, tzedek and emes, and they'll give you a certain range. You know, if the two words that you type in are within two or three words of each other, it'll give you that quote too. So here it was, one on one side, one on the other side, and two in the middle. And how do we know this? And it quotes a verse from Tehillim, from Psalms, Shenemar tzedek u'mishpat mechon kisecha. Righteousness and justice is the foundation of your throne. Chesed v'emes ikadmu fanecha. And kindness and truth come before you. For lack of a better translation. There you go. Those four terms make up the foundation of God's throne, which means that God conducts the world by acting with these four traits with us. And just as this is the foundation of his conduct, these should be the foundations of our conduct and how we establish our community and our world by emulating those four things. And sure enough, if you look through this list, that is what these institutions are creating. These institutions are creating and are reinforcing tzedek, righteousness, which means doing the right thing, doing the good thing, mishpat, justice, not tolerating deviation from these principles, enforcing it. It's not the American creed, everyone is entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, everyone should be happy because we live in a great world and out of the goodness of God. But it doesn't mean that each person can pursue his own happiness. These are the rules, and we are all taking responsibility that everybody is abiding by them. That's what Mishpat means justice. Just as God enforces justice, just as God responds to our deeds, He judges us, on Rosh Hashanah particularly, so must we act in justice. That's what the Torah is telling us.
Well, what kind of society would we have without that? I mean, how could we have lived together or prospered or survived?
You know, there are societies that are based on some of these. I don't know if there's any society that's based on all four. You know, justice, that's probably the first. Justice. Most societies will agree that you have to have some justice system.
But the Russian society in the time of the Tsar, there was no justice.
I'm saying that might be the first one. They might not have any of them.
I don't think they
You're right. Okay.
It was their brand of justice. It would not have been
disagree. It wasn't justice at all. The Tsar was God.
The king,
monarchy,
it was
actually.
A monarchy. It was a dictatorship.
The
king ruled virtually absolutely. Slaves.
That's
they
right.
They owned nothing. They worked for him on his land, and he took all the crops.
So clearly, there have been societies without any of these four. Then there'll be societies that might uphold justice. How many societies are based on chesed? That kindness and mercy is legislated.
America is one.
All right. And America is called the... I think America is called the Medina of Chesed. The state of Chesed. Kindness, mercy. Emes, truth. You know? Truth is not something that's... I don't know if truth is mandatory. I mean, you know, if you can get away with it, fine.
Well,
but do you have to tell the truth? Because that is an ideal that we must have, otherwise we lose the fabric of our society. I don't know if anybody makes that claim in our society.
It's the old Clinton thing, depends how you define truth. Your definition of truth and my definition may be very different.
Mm-hmm.
Your definition and many people's is the truth is...
But just a simple definition.
Right.
You are obligated to tell the truth.
True.
Is that part of our Constitution? You know?
Yeah. Did it
is?
Yeah.
You can be...
we conduct business.
Well,
we conduct business based on the fact you're telling me the truth and I'm telling
Wait a minute. Hold on. What about advertising? Advertising based... Okay, in court. So that's part of justice. So we have a little clause that says when you're in the justice system, you got to tell the truth. But if you're in business, you don't have to. And if you're advertising and you're writing a commercial, you don't have to tell the truth. I'm not knocking it. You know, I think we're very close.
You can say things that aren't truthful if you don't get caught.
Exactly. In other words, truth is not an absolute value or an absolute requirement. It's something that people will trust you more. It's recommended. It's highly recommended.
Yeah.
Well, in some cases, it's not recommended. Little businessman, you're going to get squashed if you're too truthful.
I know 30 years ago we did business without purchase orders. Today, you darn sure better have a purchase order when you are spending some real money with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You sure better have it in writing. It'll come back to haunt you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take his word.
Right.
And that's such a sad commentary about times. I feel very by that.
What about tzedek? What about righteousness?
What's the definition of righteousness? That's a word to me. What does it mean?
Well,
does it mean these other things combined?
The Torah tells you, basically, righteousness is by upholding the laws that God gives us. If God says that you are not allowed to believe in idols. You have to believe in one God. Here's a good example of that. It talks about where is this? There's a whole section.
Is it a righteous person is righteous with his relationship with his God or with other people?
Both. And you can't be righteous in one and not in the other. If you're one and not, if you do one and you don't do the other, you're not righteous. You know, if your God said, behave this way, and you decide, I want to behave a different way, that's not righteous. And if you're righteous to God, but you're not righteous to your fellow man, that's not righteous either.
That's a tough word.
Well, we don't have to define it. That's the good thing. The Torah doesn't leave too much multiple choice. That's the good thing about the Torah. And it's absolute.
Black and white, huh?
But listen to this. Listen to this. Here's an example of something which it's not really, it's not justice, it's not kindness, it's not truth, it's righteousness. When you come to the land that Hashem your God gives you, you shall not learn to act according to the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you one who causes his son or daughter to pass through the fire, one who practices divinations, an astrologer, one who reads omens, a sorcerer, an animal charmer, one who inquires of Ov or Yidoni, which is a certain type of contact with the dead. They knew how to do it. It was a real thing. It wasn't a fake. But we weren't allowed to do that. For anyone who does these is an abomination of Hashem, and because of these abominations, Hashem your God banishes the nations from before you. You shall be wholehearted with Hashem your God. For these nations that you are possessing, they hearken to astrologers and diviners. But as for you, not so has Hashem your God given for you. Because why is that not righteous? You're not hurting anybody. But what's happening is, by going to these astrologers or diviners or, you know, prophets other than God's prophets, people who say they'll tell you what your future is and they'll tell you what you should do and where you should go, mystics and all those kind of things, you're basically putting your trust in them and not in God. And that's not righteous. It's not a problem of it's not unkind, it's not untruthful, it's not unjust. It's your own life. But it undermines belief in God. So that's something that has got to be upheld in our community. The institution of tzedek, of doing the right thing in God's eyes, is paramount, and it's something that we have to enforce. Just as much as we have to enforce, you know, that there shouldn't be crime, that the people shouldn't murder one another and steal. There are institutions for that. The city of refuge, for example, if a person is killed accidentally, we immediately rush him into the city of refuge, and the relative cannot take revenge. You know, that's a question of justice. This person doesn't deserve that revenge because he did it by accident, and we're going to protect him. We have to uphold truth in the courtroom and with our prophets. A person who's a false prophet gets put to death because, you know, if let's say a Meshuggah would get up in Central Park and start saying I'm a prophet. And start, you know, spouting out prophecies in the name of God. So he's a Meshuggah. And even if people were following him, we would say, okay, so they're following him. That's their choice. That's their decision. That is undermining MS. That means once people believe him, then not only will they believe anybody, but they won't believe the real prophets. So we've undermined truth. And we've got to uphold truth in our society. So that's what the Torah, that's what this parsha is telling us. Institutions. So the first level of understanding was that these are institutions for the Jewish community. And the second level, which we are gaining now, is that the principles upon which these institutions stand are the very principles that God uses in creating his world and dealing with us. And that's referred to as the pillars of his throne. Mishpat, justice, Tzedek, righteousness, Emes, peace, and Chesed. What's an example of Chesed in the Torah? Before we conquer a land, we've got to first try to make peace with it. That's a law. That's an absolute obligation. Also, the one about not destroying the trees. Why is that a law?
That's the reason you gave is a valid reason.
What?
Save the fruit trees because they feed the people. When oak tree does.
What if everybody agrees that it's okay? Take a vote. Unanimous vote. Everyone agrees it's all right. You can cut down the fruit tree. You're still not allowed to do it. It's a law from the Torah. And the Chinuch, the book of mitzvahs that explains kind of the reasons behind the mitzvahs, he says it's teaching us a value. This absolute mitzvah is teaching us the value of compassion, of concern, and of caring for everything, and not being wasteful, and not being destructive. It's a value that we need to have. If we have compassion for trees and we don't act wastefully, and we take care of our possessions, that will condition us to take care of our people, and condition us to be careful about people's property and people's belongings and people's feelings. So the Torah doesn't just want us to be just, you know, everybody kind of staying within the line of the law. The Torah wants us to develop kindness and sensitivity. So here is a law that's enforcing. It's an institution. It's something which we have to abide by as a community. Even though we're going to war, we can't take the fruit tree. That's it. So all four, and everything, I think everything in the Parsha will somehow fit into one of those four categories. You going to say something?
I was going to use the word sensitive, but you did.
Sensitive.
It creates a certain sensitivity as opposed to, you know, yeah, let's go to war. You know, destroy everything.
Destroy everything in our path.
Yeah.
The words...
You do that enough,
you get very callous.
Very insensitive.
That's right. That's right.
Unfortunately, that kind of happens in the lay world we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
It's
no not
question as, about it.
Yeah, and that's tough to... You're almost living in two worlds.
We are.
The lay world and the Jewish world.
Yeah. How about... Look, just to show how it's affected us, you know, when you live in a society when you throw everything away after it doesn't work anymore, nobody fixes things, right? You don't fix your TV, you get a new one, right? You don't why wash the dishes, get, you know, throwaway dishes. But that affects the business world. You have an employee who's having is in a slump. Get rid of him, get somebody in it. Insensitivity.
Disposable society.
Or a spouse. How about a spouse?
In some cases, that's built in, unfortunately.
Sometimes it has to, but how many more, how less tolerant or how less patient are we? Because since we throw away our belongings, it's easy to throw away.
It's part of it.
Easy to throw away a spouse. Now, you can't always rely on your religious feelings carrying. I'll tell you a... You know, the great tzaddikim, the great righteous people, they knew themselves well enough. One of the reasons why they were righteous is because they knew not to rely on their righteousness. And they knew that they're human beings and they can be tested and they can fail. They're fallible. So there was a great rabbi who was probably in the last 200-300 years, the progenitor of the whole movement to study Musar and ethical character development, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And I'm sure you've read a lot about him. But he had a practice.
What's his name?
Rabbi Yisrael, his last name was Lipkin, but since he came from a town called Salant, they called him Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And he had a practice you know, because sometimes he would, his patience would be tried. And he had a practice that if he felt the need to get angry, he would give himself, he would give himself that that allowance. But one small thing, he first had to put on his special jacket. Okay, that was, that was called his anger jacket. So it was all right in his book, it was all right to get angry as long as he's wearing his jacket. Now, you want to know what kind of jacket it was? It was a plain, old, probably worn and, and wrinkled jacket. Didn't look like anything special. What was special about it was where he kept it. He kept it upstairs in the attic. Why did he keep it upstairs in the attic?
Give him time to think, going up to get a jacket.
Well, in those days, the attic didn't have staircases.
Yeah.
You had to go out into the barn. And you had to get the ladder. You had to bring the ladder and set it up, go up to the attic, find it, bring it down.
To reconsider.
It took 10-15 minutes. So by the time he got the jacket on, he had time to cool off. Now, why did he do that? Why didn't he just say, come on, it's not a, it's not proper to get angry?
Also, you,
because he knew that he couldn't, you can't always trust yourself, that we're human. So he built in some type of a trick, a gimmick,
a mechanism. Yeah.
So we can sometimes have to do that too. That was one of the most important lessons that Rabbi Weinberg used to teach his students. Don't do anything without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
After he passed away, there was this, someone who was talking about him, and he told about how he was a young student, had just come to the yeshiva, and they used to visit the Rebbe on Friday night. And they would sit around the table, and you know, they would talk and schmooze, and he would tell them Dvar Torah, and the Rebbetzin would bring out refreshments. And she once brought out a plate of chocolate cake. And the rabbi said to these students, please help yourselves. You know, make the bracha and eat some cake. So one of them was closed. One reached over and picked a piece. So the rabbi said, why'd you pick that piece? So the student got all, what did I do wrong, you know? Why'd you pick that piece? He said, I don't know, I just picked that piece. Said, you should never do anything without knowing why you do it.
He's asking the same for him.
Be honest. Say you want, it was the biggest piece, then you wanted the biggest piece.
Right.
Fine.
That's fine.
You made a decision. Right?
Yes, you made a conscious decision.
It's hard to do.
One of the most powerful experiences I've ever had with my kids, and it's happened over the years. I think one of the most powerful, it's affected me a lot, and I think it's affected the child, is when I've apologized to them for doing the wrong thing, you know, either getting upset with them or whatever. You say, I'm sorry. That has incredible impact. First of all, I feel it, and they see you as human, but that when you do so, you make mistakes, but you own up to it. And then they can learn to do
that too.
Yeah.
That's also a lesson, a learning experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
To see you do that.
Yeah. Okay.